We extend Christian greetings to each one gathered here. Welcome each one to this part of the service. I can say I was blessed this morning already. The message and some of the songs that were sung, and then also the Sunday school hour. Mine went various different ways. Also blessed to see Kendall here. We're glad to have you back. Today I would like to just encourage us in our personal Christian walk. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 11, Jesus had just given the disciples the parable of the sower. And in verse 11, the disciples had asked him, "How come do you speak in parables?" And then Jesus told them, he said, "Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given." Why is it that God allows some people to know the mysteries of heaven, to understand them, and others not? Do we understand the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven? If you drop down to verse 15, he gives an answer to that question. He says, "For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and should understand with their heart." Understand with their heart. It's because of what is in a person's heart, I think, that affects whether your ears are waxed gross or not. And then they should be converted and I should heal them. Are our ears waxed gross? Another scripture in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says that in verse 14, that ye are the light of the world. Verse 16 says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." Are we a part of the light? Is our light shining bright? Another question. How much do I desire God? Do I truly desire and love him from the depths of my heart? Do I in my heart yearn after him? It's as we read his word with this desire that it enables us to know him more and more day by day. And we should pray for a heart that desires God. The more we know God, the deeper our worship and reverence for him becomes. When you really desire God from the heart, he will make known to you the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. And the Bible, his word to us, becomes a real treasure trove. As you read and meditate with God through his Holy Spirit. And so today, as we go through the message, I would like for you to not only hear what I say, listen especially to what the Holy Spirit of God speaks to you in your heart. When you meditate and you really, truly, sincerely desire God in your heart, when you read his word and getting to know him better, the Bible will come alive to you in ways that you can hardly imagine. God's light will shine on you and you will be a light, a reflection of him. And today I would like to look at some Old Testament examples of people who were connected to that light. And they were a light in their day. And maybe as we go through some of that, it can challenge us to be a light, a better light in our day. The first account I want to touch on is found in 1 Samuel chapter 25. And in this account, King David is involved in this account. But the person I want to speak on is a lady, a lady of good understanding, had a beautiful countenance, and her name was Abigail. But in coming up to this account here, Israel was during a time when Saul was king, and David was pursued by Saul. Saul felt that David was a threat to his kingdom, and so he tried to have him killed, tried his best to have him killed. And David, in fleeing from Saul, had come to the priests and asked for sustenance there, and they knew that he was one of Saul's military commanders. They did not realize that that Saul was trying to kill David. So they had given sustenance to David and had even given him Goliath's sword. And later Saul found out about this, and he had Doeg, a very wicked, evil person, kill 85 priests because they had assisted David. And the account of Abigail comes about a year and a half or 2 years after that. And I can only imagine the load that David had to carry, the responsibility that he felt of these people losing their lives because they had aided him. There was a wilderness in Maon, and David hid out in that wilderness in part of the time that he was fleeing from Saul. I would like to read a few verses here in 1 Samuel chapter 25. It says in verse 1, "And Samuel had died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran." And it says, "And there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel. The man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail, and she was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings, and he was of the house of Caleb. And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep." I had to wonder, how in the world did a fine lady like Abigail, one with a good understanding, get hooked up with a man like Nabal, a man who was churlish and evil in all his doings? And then I had to think, you know, those people were probably living in a different culture. If a man was wealthy and had a lot of money, a lot of times they would pay money to a man and he would give his daughter to that person for a wife. And I wondered if that happened here. I don't know that. But because of this account here and something that happened, I can tell in going through this scripture that Abigail had a connection to God. And I'm blessed with that. But in this account, Nabal had shepherds. He had quite a few people working for him, and they were taking care of their sheep, and David hiding out in this same place with his men. And he had like 400 men with him at least. And David grew up being a shepherd himself. And so when he encountered Nabal's men out there caring for sheep, you know, his men looked out for them. They protected them from other enemies that were out there. And I think David probably ordered his men that they should not allow any hurt to come on Nabal and his men. And so when David heard that Nabal was shearing his sheep, he sent 10 of his men to Nabal to ask for some provisions for him and his men. And Nabal, being the wicked man that he was, railed on David's men, was very unkind to them, and they departed and went back and told David everything that Nabal had said to them. And it upset David. It says he girded on his sword, and he told all his men to gird on their swords. and they were going to go and destroy that man. Meantime, while this was going on, one of Nabal's servants, a young man, went to Abigail, and he told her all that Nabal had done, how David had come. And he told Abigail that while they were out there watching the sheep, David and his men were just like a wall of protection to us. There absolutely no hurt came on us when we were out there with them. And Nabal railed on them. And so Abigail, what should she do? She took things in hand. She was a woman of good understanding. And she went and got a lot of provisions together. And I'm going to read a few verses here. Actually, I'll break in verse 17, read a few verses. It says, "Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined against our master and against all his household." This was the young man talking to Abigail. "For he is such a son of Belial that a man cannot speak to him." Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed and 5 measures of parched corn and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on asses. And she said to her servants, "Go on before me. Behold, I come after you." But she told not her husband Nabal. Now, Nabal, being evil in all his doings, he absolutely would not have agreed to this. And this was quite a phenomenal amount of food. It takes a lot of work to prepare food like that. But Abigail did all that. And she sent that to David. And I'd like to break in again in verse 23. And it says, "When Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the ass and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground and fell at his feet and said, 'Upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be. And let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let not, my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord, whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal." David listened to the words of Abigail. It would have been a bad thing for David to go and kill Nabal and all his servants as he had intended to do. If we go over to verse 36, I'd like to read a few verses there. And this also shows good understanding by Abigail. "And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken. Wherefore she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light." And it says, "And it came to pass in the morning when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And it came to pass about 10 days after that the Lord smote Nabal that he died." I'm going to put this just a little bit in my own words. When Abigail came to Nabal, he was having a party and he was drunk. And so she did not tell him anything. But the next morning after his drunkenness had passed and he came to, and then she related what she did. And just in my own words, I think it so upset Nabal that he had a stroke. He was so enraged, if you will, upset. The loss of all this food that Abigail had furnished, that he had a stroke. You know, God intended for us as his children to be hospitable people. We should help others that have needs. And if you look through the Bible time and again, God's children were hospitable people. They were people who tried to help others when there were needs. But the point that I really want to make here is found in verse 24. How many times have you told a lie or anything to get out of taking responsibility for something that you might have done? How many times did someone else mess up and do something bad and you took responsibility for it? That is what Abigail did here in verse 24. She is speaking to David here, and she said, "Upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be." The sin of her husband Nabal, she took that sin on herself. And I believe God in heaven looked down and he saw this lady do something, just a little bit of something that his son would one day do for the whole world. When he came down and he took our sin on himself, he made a way for us. He became sin for us. And then he did the sacrifice. He sacrificed his own life for me and for you. And Abigail did just a little bit of that when she took that sin of her husband on herself. Took responsibility for that. But she made it right with David. Later, David took her and she became one of his wives. But that is basically the story of Abigail. Fast forward. David later became king. And he was a man after God's own heart. And later, when he departed from the scene, his son Solomon became king. And Solomon, we have a lot of wise words in the Bible from Solomon. And, you know, God put a lot of store into David. But I can't help but believe that God was sorely disappointed in Solomon. Solomon had a very good beginning. And we have a lot of wise words in the Bible from him while he was serving God. But Solomon fell away. Solomon is the one that built the temple and had it built. And he had wise workmen under him. And when Solomon was getting on older in life, there was another young man that came on the scene that was very industrious. And it seems like God put a lot of hope in him. And his name was Jeroboam. Very industrious man. And one day, because of Solomon having fallen away from God, a prophet came and met with Jeroboam out in the field. And he talked to him. And he told him that God was going to rip away 10 of the tribes of Israel and give them to him. And he made very strong promises, God did to Jeroboam, of how he would establish his kingdom with these 10 tribes of Israel as he had established David in his kingdom. And when Solomon found out what this prophet had done, he tried to have Jeroboam killed. And so Jeroboam fled into Egypt. And he waited there till Solomon died. And when Solomon died, Rehoboam, his son, became king. And when Rehoboam was king, he decided to exact, through the advice of young men, exact heavier burdens on the people than what Solomon did. And meantime, when Jeroboam got word that Solomon had passed from the scene, he came back, and the people really looked up and esteemed him because he had really been a good leader for them when he was there before. And so when Rehoboam enacted these heavy taxes on the people, they said, "We're going to follow Jeroboam." And they made Jeroboam king. 10 tribes did. And the other two tribes went to fight against them to force them to remain a part of them. But God met them and said, no, this is of the Lord. Let it be. And so the people went back to their own tents. God put a lot of stock in Jeroboam. But Jeroboam, I can't help but believe that seriously God was disappointed in him. In one place it says he like cast God behind his back. After God established him in his kingdom, he got to thinking, you know, the people are going to still go back to Jerusalem to worship, and then they're going to turn their hearts back to Rehoboam. They're going to leave me. So instead of inquiring from God what to do, he went and built cities and he built idols and he built places of idol worship for the people to worship there so they wouldn't have to go back to Jerusalem. And one day when Jeroboam was in there worshiping in his idol temple, a prophet of God had come and tried to warn him, and Jeroboam didn't like what he had to say, so he stuck his hand out and said, arrest that man, grab him. And when he did that, his hand shrunk up and shriveled and he couldn't bring it back anymore. And then he pleaded with the prophet that he would plead with his God to heal his arm, and so he was healed. But Jeroboam did not turn from his sin. There was a succession of kings after Jeroboam, but Jeroboam taught the people to sin. He taught them in idol worship, and he's very noted for his wickedness after that. After Jeroboam, there was Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, Omri, Ahab, Ahaziah, and Jehoram. And as far as I know, every one of them was a wicked king in Israel. But you know, they might have been influenced in wickedness, but in the middle of all that wickedness, there were still God-fearing people. People who still worship God, who were true. But the kings were evil. And Ahab is noted for being wicked. But Ahab was also, I believe, a mighty warrior. And there were times in Ahab's life when he, I think, would have wanted to worship God. In fact, there was one time when the Syrian military, under, I think it was Ben-Hadad, along with 32 other kings, came and decided they're going to attack Israel and just really get rid of them or whatever. Well, because of the wickedness of the Syrians, God sent a prophet to Ahab and told him that he was going to be victorious. And Ahab went out there and he fought these 32, 33 kingdoms and won the victory. And later, the Syrians coming away from that fight, they decided that, you know, God, Israel's God is the God of the hills. But we'll fight them in the plains and then we'll beat them. And so sometime later, they gathered all their military together again and come out to fight Israel. And Ahab and his military came out. And the Bible says that Ahab and his warriors looked like two little kid flocks. And the Syrians encompassed the land. But the prophet again came to Ahab and told him that he was going to win the victory. And Ahab did. His little group had a big victory over the Syrians that day in their battle. And it's like Ahab wanted to serve God, but he was married to Jezebel. Jezebel was the daughter of a king of the Zidonians. And if you look that up, I think those were like Phoenician people. I don't know the history of them much. But Jezebel is noted for her wickedness and with her influence. And Ahab, I'm inclined to think that he did not have that much teaching about God, but he had several encounters with Elijah the prophet. But in all this, God, during this time, God still had his prophets who would go through Israel, and there were people who revered God God spoke through his prophets, and it was a blessing that in the middle of all that darkness, there were still people who served God. And after Ahab, Jehoram became king. And I'm not sure Jehoram was either a son or a grandson of Ahab. Ahaziah was in the middle there between Ahab, and I'm not sure if Jehoram might have been a son of Ahaziah. But it was during this time that Syria had again become more powerful. Excuse me. And they had bands of their soldiers that would make incursions into the land of Israel, and they would attack here and there and do damage and even take some people away, take them home, make them slaves. There's an account here about Naaman, and I would like to read it's in 2 Kings chapter 5. I would like to read verse 1 through 19 and then come back and talk here. And a person here, I'd like to elaborate a little bit on Naaman, but I would also like to elaborate on a little maid of Israel. 2 Kings chapter 5, I'd like to read verse 1 through 19. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel, and the king of Syria said, 'Go to, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel.' And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, 'Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy.' And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, 'Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man does send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me.' And it was so, when Elisha the man of God had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, and that he had sent to the king, saying, 'Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel.' So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, 'Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean.' But Naaman was wroth, and went away and said, 'Behold, I thought, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, 'My father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather than when he saith to thee, wash and be clean?' Then he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him. And he said, 'Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant.' But he said, 'As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none.' And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, 'Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. And he said unto him, Go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. I'd like to put some of this into my words as well. In Israel, there was a family, I believe, who worshiped God. And they had this little girl. I don't know, was she an only child? Or did she grow up in a family with siblings? When I look back in my own life as a little child, I remember some of the favorite memories that I have were when my mom would read Bible stories to me and my older brother. And we were still, this was before we went to school, we were still young enough that she would tell us a Bible story and then put us down for our afternoon naps. Do you moms and dads read Bible stories to your children? What kind of Bible stories did this family relate to their little daughter? I'm inclined to think that they might have told them stories about Noah and the flood, about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. She might have even told about the slavery in Egypt. A lot of stories were handed down verbally back in that day. She might have told them stories about the Red Sea crossing, the crossing of Jordan at flood stage, how the walls of Jericho fell. I mean, the list could go on and on. It's important, I believe, for us that we relate to our children stories of things that God has done for his people. Well, I do not know. I think the times were hard in Israel during this time. And I do not know if this young girl who was taught about God and his ways, she was taught about the prophet of God who was there in Israel, and his name was Elisha. But one day the Syrian, a group of warriors came. And I don't know, was she alone at home and her parents might have been out in the field working? But they captured her and took her back to Syria. And she became a slave to Naaman's wife. What kind of light? Who here would feel like allowing the light of God shine in your life if you were captured that way? Taken away from your parents as a young girl. Taken away from everything you've ever loved and known. How do you think her parents felt knowing that the Syrians had invaded their home, taken their only child or one of their children? I don't think they ever expected to see her again. And yet, they were able to trust in God. May that be a lesson in faith to us. And now Naaman, it says that God worked through Naaman and allowed Syria to have victory. And probably that was because of the wickedness of Israel. Sometimes good people have to suffer with the bad. But one thing about Naaman, he was an honorable man. But Naaman was a leper. Imagine how that would affect you if you have leprosy. He probably had to be totally separate, live in separate quarters from his family. He could never be able to touch his wife or any of his children. Leprosy is contagious. It's a life of isolation. And it is a slow rotting of the body while you're still alive. But Naaman was an honorable man. He was looked up to. And there are some good attributes about Naaman. I mean, while he was in a rage, his servants could still talk and reason with him. But one other little point I would like to make about this little slave girl. I think the light in her shone so bright, and there was something different about her that they really noticed. And when she spoke, people listened. Imagine taking note of what a little slave girl would have to say. It even came to the ears of the king. And the king put stock in that. And he wanted to have Naaman healed, and so he decided to give that a try. But he sent Naaman to the house of the king of Israel instead of to the prophet of God. And Jehoram, here the prophet of God with the ability to connect with God and have people healed to the extent that he had, and Jehoram didn't even know him. And Jehoram really experienced something here for the fact that after this account happened, he had some communications with Elisha. In fact, Elisha told him whenever the Syrians were going to attack. And that's a whole different story. But anyhow, Naaman, when he came over here and then he was sent, Jehoram thought that the Syrian king was trying to pick a fight with him to imagine that he would be able to heal somebody from leprosy. Now, Jehoram didn't know God, and he didn't know his prophet either. But the prophet knew that Naaman was coming. He had been told by God, and so he sent a messenger over to the king's house, and he told Naaman to come to his house. And so when Naaman came over to the prophet's house, he expected the prophet to come out and meet him, and in a big way, tell him to do some kind of thing that then he would be healed from his leprosy. Well, Elisha didn't even show his face. He sent a servant out to meet him, just tell him to go dip in Jordan 7 times, and you'll be clean. And that is what enraged Naaman. You mean he comes all this way from Syria to be healed and the prophet doesn't even come and talk to me? So he was going to go home without even dipping himself, but then his servants were able to reason with him. And I imagine Naaman, when he allowed himself to be, while we're over here, it won't hurt to try it. So he went down to the Jordan River. He dipped himself. Nothing changed. Again, nothing changed. Dipped himself 6 times. Nothing changed. His flesh was all scabby and rotting away. And then he dipped himself the 7th time. And when he came back up, it says his flesh was just like the flesh of a little child and totally clean. I can only imagine the emotions that went through that man's mind. Being healed. And it humbled him. He went back to the prophet and begged for some earth, 2 mules burdens of earth. I would guess maybe 10 to 15 gallons of soil from Israel. Because going forward, he wanted to take that home so that he would always worship the God in Israel, Israel's God. He knew that there was no God in all the earth but the God of Israel. And I can only imagine Naaman's homecoming. When he met his family. No more isolation. My, how Naaman's life changed. And with him worshiping Israel's God, in my mind, I bet he took that slave girl home. Might have reunited her with her parents. I don't read that. But if you read this account, I wonder. How many lives in Syria were changed because of the light of this little maid of Israel? It's just a brief little account. But my, what a difference she made in the lives of those she touched. How many of us have this same God-given light shining in us? Do we understand the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven? or are our ears waxed dross? It is only to those who have been born again that experience and know the joy of being redeemed, that know the true joy and fulfillment that comes from giving, sharing, caring, loving, sharing with others the things God has given us. May God's light forever shine in and through each of us as His children. With these thoughts, let's kneel for prayer.